loving what you're hearing? Well, the establishment hates it. And right now, they're conjuring up new ways to try and censor RCR. To ensure you never miss a beat of the hard-hitting news you've come to know and love, make sure you're on the RCR mailing list. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.
RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Scott McIndoe's passion is to make certain that the vision of more fish in the water for future generations is not something that we just talk about. He's totally committed to this becoming our reality. Scott is Legacy's Fisheries Management and Alignment Specialist. He's an active environmentalist. Used to be quite good at fishing, apparently. A talented networker, a green-fingered gardener, and a loving family man. That's nice. He's all about working positively together, as demonstrated by his tireless efforts to working closely with Tangata Whenua and environmental groups around New Zealand. Scott believes success will only be achieved together by understanding and respecting each other's aspirations and needs. His energy is infectious and his passions are inspiring. How's that for an intro, Scott?
Oh, very beautiful. Thank you, Paul. I'll take that any day.
It's all true, right?
Don't believe that bit about fishing. The only thing I can catch is a cold at the moment.
Okay. All right. We're going to get to this, but I'm going to bring it up now because this is what jumped out at me in kind of looking over this before we chatted. New Zealand's fisheries management system is corrupt, impacting small-scale fishers who earn as little as $3.50 per kilo, while retail prices reach $60 a kilo. Wow.
It's an insanely dysfunctional system.
How does that happen?
A botched privatization, a rush of blood in 1985-86 that saw us attempt to manage greed and corruption by creating individual transferable quotas, perpetual property rights, and handing out the most goodies to they who had done the most damage. I mean, it's when you think back, and this is the benefit of hindsight, what were we thinking? Those same people are doing exactly what they done did do to wipe the fisheries out in the late 70s and 80s. They won't change. They refuse to alter their behavior. They insist on their so-called right to violate the seabed with their ridiculous mobile bottom contact fishing methods, trawling, seining, and dredging. The rest of the world's aghast. They're looking at us like, really? On the one hand, you claim to have the world's leading fisheries management regime, this quota management system, and on the other hand, you continue to trawl your sacred inshore benthic, that's the seabed, environment. We all know that that is just destroying the productivity of that paddock, the inshore. Meanwhile, as exhibit A, B, C, D, E, F, etc., one species after another are going over the cliff. The scallops are gone. No really? Amount of they're history. We've shut scallops nationwide. The crayfish in the north are gone. They're still able to peel out some crayfish with technology creep. And ours fishing today bears no resemblance to an ours fishing back in the 80s when we privatized. Technology, military technology, is now on the dashboard of every self-respecting fisherman. And that includes us, by the way, the non-commercial. I was on a boat the other day that had a sonar on it. Eye-watering. He could tell me what species, what size, at 250 meters depth. It was like, you're joking.
So it's kind of like a battlefield now by the sounds of things in terms of the equipment being used. I thought, though, you alluded to the first-class quota system, and I've heard it referred to as that. I'm going to have to think again about who's actually telling me that. It's probably the people who came up with it, or the generation on from that. But I thought we were, you know, this, 100% natural, you know, all those words environmental loving, can relate to the, you know, to the sea and the land. And it sounds like it's all rubbish.
It's total rubbish. I mean, Hitler and his mob came up with that one-liner, you can fool more of the people with a big lie than a little one.
Yeah.
Ask any
Goebbels, yeah.
Ask yeah. any recreational fisherman, how's the fishing? And he'll probably say pretty good. And he'll be referring to snapper yeah. centricity. Ask him, how's your Gurnard John Dory Trevally Tarakihi catch of recent times? And he said, oh, no, we haven't caught any of those for ages. They're gone.
So they're literally, the numbers just aren't there. Is that what it is? Physical
that's exactly,
numbers.
That's exactly how it is. You can still find them in the supermarket, that charisma-free, skinned and boned white ground fish in stainless steel trays. There's no sign of the rest of the fish, just the skinned and boned fillets.
Yeah, because that's what the people want. That's what the people want, Scott. Nice and tidy and good looking.
But have a look at the size of the Gurnard fillets.
Not
really?
Very big.
Oh, just insanely small. Have a look at the John Dory fillets. Two mouthfuls. It's over. And those are the product of trawling as they scrape the seabed, trying to catch uncatchable digital fish. They're all over allocated. The only finfish that is truly managed by quota, and I'm only talking to the inshore here, not the deep water. The only finfish that is really managed by catch settings, these output controls that we have adopted, is snapper. We're allowed to catch 4,500 tons, and that's what they catch, or that's what they declare. Everything else is over allocated. No matter how hard they try, they cannot catch what they're allowed to catch.
Well, sorry, why is snapper, I won't use the word abundant, still available? Is that because that's the sort of go-to recreational fish, and if you couldn't catch that, there'd be a political problem?
Not really. It's deeper than that. It's an ecology answer I will offer you, ecology-biology conversation. We're talking about the cockroach of the sea. This is a mongrel that will live in a muddy estuary. It will live just off the beach. It'll live in 250 meters of water. It'll eat anything. It'll shag whatever casts a shadow. This is a creature that is a serial spawner. The warmer the water, the more successful its recruitment.
Well, okay. Didn't know that.
We catch snapper with horrendous injuries. They just shrug them off. Missing eyes, half a tail, a big scoliosis in the back. They are one tough fish.
Okay. That's informative to hear that. I didn't know any of that.
Do you understand fecundity?
I think I do, but go on.
Fecundity is the ability of a species to replace itself.
Right.
You and I are particularly fecund. We've got a high sperm count. We ovulate for about 30 years. We've got on top of our infant mortality. As a result, there ain't no shortage of Homo sapiens. We are fecund. Now, the snapper is at the top of the tree when it comes to fecundity.
Right.
As long as there's something for these little creatures to eat, remember, when they are born, there's no breast. It's eat something smaller than you or
straight away.
Eat it that day.
Yeah.
So it's a soup of life. And the snapper is the winner at the moment, and as a result, we love to eat them and we love to catch them. And
just so happens, yeah.
They just happen to be pretty poor, idiot-proof to catch. It's not hard to catch a snapper. Meanwhile, everything else is just fading to grey as we look away and get hung up about cover shots of big, fat snappers with happy anglers.
There was one in the paper yesterday. Someone had caught a big snapper, and there they were holding it there, and they thought it was a shark or something like that. So it still makes the news. This is really disappointing to hear. Okay, so let's get down to business. What are the is the quota system fit for purpose at all?
No, there's a handful of species where it might have an application: crayfish, parwa, but those guys don't run around too quickly. They're reasonably fixed to their space. In the deep water, there might be an argument for output controls. Now, let me explain what output controls means. Since time immemorial, we have managed fisheries globally with input controls. If the method's not okay, we ban it. If the season's too long, we shorten it. If we need to make our nets bigger or smaller, we do so. That's input control. Rahui is an input control. It's called fisheries management. It's a thing of great beauty. In our infinite wisdom, with the neoliberals running amok, we said, nah, let's flag input controls. These guys are too hard to manage. We don't have the information. We can't seem to get them to declare any income. Let's go for output controls. Let's privatize. And so we went for individual transferable quota. That's an output control. Now, you can't have output controls and input controls. When we did the deal as a society, without it really being explained to us, we lost our authority to govern or manage using input controls. And that's where we are in a real cleft stick today. We've got vested interests, i.e. the owners of these catch entitlements, these allocations, saying you have no right to stop us trawling. It's surfacing as a contemporary breach of Te Tiriti o Waitangi, fisheries settlement deed signed in 1992, where in good faith, tangata whenua, now mana whenua, settled, full and final settlement, sea lord deal. No one said anything about, oh, by the way, in 30 years' time, we're going to not let you do what you're allowed to do today in order to catch all these gurnard, John Dory, flatfish, Trevally, Tarakihi, etc. No one said to them back then, you're good to go, bro, for another 30 or 40 years, but then we're going to start using input controls again. Do you understand where I'm coming from?
So the most recent of those then would be the idea to put cameras on the vessels.
Oh, boy. Yeah, we will never see the behavior that these guys have been able to get away with for so long. The moment there's a, you know, observed behavior is modified behavior. Let us not mince our words.
Yeah.
The moment there's a camera in place, the real baddies are gone. They just leave. They find something else to do.
Right.
Then we go through the dance of the desperate for a period of time of transition and interim. At the moment, they're saying, how dare you put a camera on our boat? That's an you're interfering with our privacy and our basic human rights. All we're trying to do is get a handle on this cowboy activity that's going on over the horizon, out of sight, where we know that there is a hell of a lot of dumping, high grading, misbehavior, as these people do the human thing. They're trying to extract the most return possible from each ton of allocation. So, no, they're not going to bring home giant snapper. There's no market for a giant snapper. You can't export a giant snapper. The big guys controlling the fish say to the fishermen, just don't do that. We don't want big snapper. And if you continue to do it, you'll have to find someone else to fish for.
Right.
I could go on. I'm just scratching the surface here. I have to be careful about what I say.
Okay. I want to know then about how this is all operated. So politicians, because I know that Shane Jones, he was I think, early involved in those settlements which involved quota back in the 90s. He's now back in Parliament, and I think he's been calling for a more lenient environment, let's say, to exploit resources. So I don't know if that includes fish. Maybe it does. I've certainly talked about fish farms, I think one even in Cook Strait. But anyway, who's ultimately in control of this? Who's got the levers? Is it the politicians or the bureaucrats?
Shane is the 14th minister that I've had the privilege of working with in this space.
14th?
I've had 14 ministers, and some of them have been remarkable. Some of them have been pretty mediocre. The ones that we've had to tackle head on, or would appear to be tackling head on, in my opinion, have been thrown under the bus by senior ministry officials who ought to know better.
Ought to, or do know better?
I use the word ought. Yeah, they know better, all right. For example, let's talk to Nathan Guy, who chose not to have much to do with us. It was a long 7 years of being in the cold. And we gave him a bit of a hiding in 2013. In hindsight, he didn't deserve that hiding. The officials who gave him the advice that set him off on a fisheries management process, they're the ones who ought to be held to account. They recommended to Nathan Guy that the snapper fishery was in such rude good health that he ought to increase the allowable catch by 500 tons. We said,
But why would they want that to happen?
In that particular case, they wished to satisfy the incessant demand they were receiving from the vested interests, what we call the TACC shareholders, the owners of shares in the total allowable commercial catch. Without wanting to blindside or confuse this overly, quota ceased to exist in 1990. It only lasted for 5 years, and it was replaced by total allowable commercial catch. And each of these fishing people and organizations have shares in the total allowable commercial catch of each fishery. There are 620 fisheries, 80 different species. So it's quite a big, complex picture. Inshore, deep water, fish, shellfish.
But surely that wasn't the only advice available to him.
No, we gave him some bloody wonderful advice.
So why isn't he listening equally or not picking up on the full picture? Why do they always go with the bloody officials?
Because the process demands that the minister is given advice by the officials. He then makes a decision as to whether or not this fisheries management decision is worthwhile, the process that then ensues. He, in his wisdom, he chose not to have a relationship with us. That's Nathan's prerogative. Every minister has a right to engage with those who he or she see fit. He chose not to have a relationship with the recreational fishing fraternity, and he paid the price. He paid the consequence when he realized that the advice he was given resulted in a really horrible storm of protest. You might recall David Shearer walking into the house holding little snappers up.
Does ring a bell, actually. Yeah.
John Key said, hey, I've got 1,500 submissions on the GCSB and over 40,000 submissions on the snapper bag limit. What do you think I should be paying attention to? He ducked in behind snapper to treat GCSB rather flippantly.
Were busy spying on Trump at the time anyway, so they were already busy.
We gave him 40,000 good reasons why he should be having more balanced advice. In the end, I have to acknowledge Nathan for making an outstanding decision. But what an agony he had to go through to get there. I won't take you into the details because it's blindingly complex. Suffice to say that he elected to give the extra 500 tons of digital fish to a digital allowance for the recreational sector, and he gave nothing to the commercial sector. So it was sort of like status quo. But what the public did was embrace a new bag limit of 7, not 9. We constrained ourselves, and we went from 27 centimetres to 30 centimetres as a new size limit. And again, we embraced that. No protest. Thank you, Minister. Wise, good call. We go there. Industry continue to target 25 centimetre fish. Their gear is optimised to catching these what we call undersized snapper,
Okay, yeah.
Which they then export to Australia. where you can buy a whole baby snapper plate size for $20 Australian, including Australian GST.
It's probably cheaper than here, is it? Tell me it's not.
Much cheaper, there's no added value. It's a whole fish. There's no attempt to add value. It's just this commodification something where we're sending these fish away for $5 each, $10 a kilo. Really? Hang on a moment. There's no economy here. It's a silly nonsense. Where's Shane? I've got a real optimism around Shane Jones, and many people will find that hard to reconcile because he is conflicted. He's deeply orientated to the commercial. What is classic opening one-liner? I'm not here to save sponges. I'm here to save the fishing industry. Okay, Shane, thanks. I respect you for being so upfront, but let's talk turkey about the economy. You know, the non-commercial, the public, have got about 4% on a dripping wet good day of the fisheries. Mm-hmm. And we've got an economy of around about $1.5 billion.
Right. We've got in fisheries.
In recreational fishing.
Okay.
Tourism, tackle, boats.
Oh, I got you. Yep.
All the stuff that makes this activity one of our favorite pastimes. And we're doing so on about 3.5 to 4% of the fish. The fishing industry have got the rest. Let's call it 95%. Now, they claim to export 2 billion. Yeah, right. Take the mussels and the salmon and the oysters out, and you're back to a pretty mediocre 1.5 billion on a good day. We've got no idea what they sell locally because they refuse to talk about those numbers. Let's give them another 1 billion for argument's sake because it doesn't really matter. They've got an economy of 2.5 billion, 10,000 jobs, a whole lot of fuss and bother, but they've got 95% of the pie. We've got 3 or 4 or 5% of the pie. In some fisheries, we've got a hell of a lot more than that. In kingfish, for example, we catch a lot more than the commercial sector, much to their disgust. And you can expect some heat coming on to Minister Jones to do something about that. The bottom line is, for Mr. Jones, if he's really serious about boosting the economy of our country, what might 6 or 7% of the resource look like in the hands of the non-commercial sector?
So you're saying that there could be better earnings in the non-commercial sector and everything that hangs off it than is it a cartel?
Massively.
Of big operators who have a huge piece of the pie. How come they've ended up with 95%? Doesn't sound like a good deal.
Well, it was always like that. We're just...
Because it means everyone has to support the industry. It's like, you know, strong-armed into supporting them, yet it sounds like the accountability just isn't there to justify that incredible advantage.
When you privatize, that's inevitable. It's unavoidable.
Right. Okay.
Can I change the tone?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. Let me quote Teddy Roosevelt.
Okay.
Complaining about a problem without posing a solution is called whining.
Yep.
We're over complaining about a problem.
Well, that's what was going to be my next set of questions. What do we do about it? Carry on.
We came to a conclusion in about 2015 that we didn't have another 15 years to argy-bargy, scrap and to and fro. We've got to get positive and constructive. We've got to be solutions-focused. Another neoliberal, Milton Friedman, classic. Mm. Only a crisis, actual or perceived, produces real change.
Yeah.
When that crisis occurs, the actions that are taken depend upon the ideas that are lying around. That, I believe, is our basic purpose, to develop alternatives to existing policies, to hold them alive and available until the politically impossible becomes the politically inevitable. Now,
we'll outline how that is. We've got about 10 minutes left.
It's that sort of rhetoric.
Give us the architecture of what needs to be in place to replace what we have at the moment.
It's that sort of rhetoric that's empowered us to spend money on developing alternatives. So the New Zealand Sport Fishing Council of which Legacy is a wholly owned subsidiary, have invested over $1 million in the development of rescuefish.co.nz.
Rescuefish.co.nz.
Rescuefish, Ika Ro Ora, rescuefish.co.nz is a compelling, affordable, achievable, inevitable alternative to the quota management system, particularly for the inshore fisheries. No better evidenced by Sanford kicking for touch late last year, where they sold themselves to Moana for their inshore fishing interests in the North Island. The analogy rat leaving sinking ship springs to mind.
Sold themselves. That's an interesting way of putting it. Sold themselves.
They sure did. They took their entire inshore interest and sold the annual catch entitlement for 10 years with a ratchet clause, closely resembles a commercial property lease. And now they're shutting their factory, they're shutting their merchant, their distribution, their customer base, and Moana have taken on that opportunity stroke obligation to catch, process, and export stroke sell the annual catch entitlement of Sanford's. Sanford's have retained their shares in the total allowable commercial catch for this, that, one thing and another. But they've sold this thing called ACE, annual catch entitlement, which is a product of the quota management system.
So they know change is coming.
Well, I suppose so. They're pretty smart operators. And they've given up trying to make money out of that asset, that non-performing asset, that stranded asset. They've failed to make money. It's been bleeding. So they've cut and run and put a lease price on it. And when we can find out precisely what they've actually transacted, we'll be using those numbers to update our rescue fish valuation, which we did 6 years ago. Peter Wilson, senior economist, New Zealand Institute of Economic Research, 10 years as director of taxation policy at Treasury. He took on the unenviable task of valuing this for us at considerable fee, and we came up with a pretty good model for valuing this whole ball of wax. Now we're getting these contemporary valuation numbers, which we will apply, and we'll present those to the minister and say, let's think hard about whether or not it's time for a reset.
Yeah. Okay.
That's one alternative, rescue fish.
Yeah.
It's all compelling, right. And I do recommend you and readers have a look at it. It's a beauty, and we've traveled the world. It's a compilation LP. It's the best of the East Coast of Canada.
Yeah, greatest hits. Yeah.
Greatest hits, and I'll tell you what, it's the price of fish, YouTube, the price of fish. Mike Barner produced it with us. It's a 40-minute documentary that spells it out, and it's a chronicle of our journey through Iceland, the Faroe Islands, Canada, America, and talking to people, affected parties. That went down like a cup of cold sick when we presented it to Minister Stuart Nash. He pushed us off to the Mahi Kuhu, this thin layer of senior public servants who
explain that label, that term.
The Mahi Kuhu. We asked some of our close friends in the Te Ao Māori world, can you give us a te reo word or phrase to describe sneaky, devious theft of sacred stuff?
Okay.
And we've settled on Mahi Kuhu, K-U-H-U. And it's a phrase that I'm increasingly comfortable with to describe the protagonists, the people at this who ought to, and as you say, do know better, and their behaviors. What do we want, Paul? Very simple. We want restored abundance and a fair go for future generations of New Zealanders. And we don't think that's unreasonable.
I don't think anyone does. It's been really interesting talking with you. Wish we had a bit more time, but you've suggested places that folk can go to find out more. And do you see anything changing in the near term? And how long can we keep up this pretense of having this world-class system, you know, because we're so genius here?
Oh, I think the bubble's surfacing. They can't suppress it any much longer. We're virile, agile, athletic, as you can see on the Zoom. We've got over 70 active players, contractors, trustees, governance up the yin-yang. We've got an average of 10 years experience. So we've got over 700 years of hardcore, amazing. Some of these people are remarkable, but we're just signing on one graduate after another in their mid-20s. Talk about passion. So I'm really optimistic.
You can see why Maori could be grumpy.
Oh, they deserve to be grumpy. They have been monumental.
You know, with those fishing methods and the kind of war footing use of technology to sort of wipe it out. I can see why they're grumpy.
Let me wrap up with there will be no fundamental reform without Maori heading it up. And no. I'm really confident that they will. I'm very confident that Maori will be the spearhead here. They will insist on reset, and they will do so with the power, the resource that is the New Zealand Sport Fishing Council. We're just steadily growing and getting better at our job, and I do appreciate this opportunity. Thank you.
Scott McIndoe, nice to meet you from Legacy. Great to have you tell that story. I think we're all a bit better informed, and again, you know, question marks floating about. I'm kind of over, and I'm sure our listeners are too, over being told how good we are, when in reality, we're actually pretty shabby. I mean, look at the way we treat the bush. We drop poison into it. I mean, who would do that? You know, and here we are wiping out the fisheries. And at the same time, we're telling the world that we're connected. It's kind of worn out, that one, don't you think?
Well, certainly the vested interests are...
Yeah, but it gets all the way up to political. This is the problem.
And there's not much in between them. Vested interests are pretty influential. I'm being diplomatic.
Yeah.
Perhaps, Paul, another session where we can explore some more joyful space like kaiika.co.nz, yet another constructive solution which addresses us, the people, because we're all part of the problem and we can all do better. The public have a proud history of embracing better behavior.
Yeah, if they know about it, Scott, this is the problem. People have assumptions like me before talking to you. I thought we had this, world-class system. And even I was like, yeah, you want to put cameras on the boat, stop spying on people. But I can see now that controlling the input thing is important. But people are, as you say, it's offshore. It's off in the distance somewhere, you know?
I got nothing to hide. If I need to have a camera on my boat in order to justify owning the permit to go fishing, who cares?
Not to have it if it was causing you an issue.
You're onto it. Thank you.
All right. Hey, Scott McIndoe from Legacy. Thanks for coming on.
You're so welcome. Ka pai.
Loving what you're hearing? Well, the establishment hates it. And right now, they're conjuring up new ways to try and censor RCR. To ensure you never miss a beat of the hard-hitting news you've come to know and love, make sure you're on the RCR mailing list. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.